That's Brandi Carlile. Halfway through the 8 o'clock hour, it is a Thursday edition of the Mornings with Ed show. And our city is fortunate in many ways. One of them is that our mayor comes on and chats with us each and every Thursday morning. And last Thursday, as busy as she was, as all the things going on, she kept her commitment to an 8:30 time slot. I can't tell you how cool that was. We welcome again for a conversation this morning our mayor, Sue Kempf. Welcome to the conversation, Sue.
Good morning, Ed. Good to be with you this morning.
It's great to have you. It's great to have you on this morning. And just another quick thank you for jumping in last week and keeping us updated and letting us know what was happening during the fire. I know you were busy. I know your time was super valuable that day. Everybody was on you. But thank you for keeping that commitment here.
My pleasure.
Okay. Let's talk quickly about last week, and let's just kind of brush. Let's finish it off. Let's polish off what we learned from last week. During the council meeting, some people had called about, and even Bob had said that he'd gotten two separate alerts. One was from Nixle. Another was one much later in the morning from Alert OC. What do you want to tell our listeners about Nixle?
Yeah, so Laguna Beach residents should be signing up for Nixle, and that's an 888-777 number. So that pertains to Laguna Beach. And you should also sign up for Alert OC. But, you know, so they're on a different, you know, they're on a different communication timeline than we are. I don't, you know, they put out information as they have it. We put it out as we have it. But if you really, you know, want to concentrate on what's happening in Laguna Beach, then you should sign up for our local Nixle.
Right.
And, you know, with Nixle also, you get the, you know, you get the weekly community updates from the city, which is also helpful. We kind of give you, you know, what's going on in town as well. But for emergencies, you definitely need to sign up for our Nixle.
Yeah. Nixle was way ahead of the game. So that's, we'll keep our listeners in tune as to if they're not signed up, that they should be signed up. So we'll keep that top of mind here. During the meeting this past Tuesday, Chief Calvert came to the defense of the overnight police dispatchers, and rightfully so, about how well they performed as the fire was breaking. There are just two of them in the overnight. But that defense was based on those two very well-qualified dispatchers still being overwhelmed by the number of calls coming in, and some people had complained about the line, the 911 being busy. So what do you think? Is the answer maybe one or two overnight dispatchers for exactly that kind of situation?
Well, I know Sheree yesterday had a post-mortem on the fire response with all city personnel, and I'll have to talk to her about, you know, what their opinion is of that. You know, my own personal opinion is, you know, I need to see some, you know, data on that, you know, before we make a decision. I kind of like to work off the database rather than, you know, anecdotal, because anecdotal never always could be suspect. But,
right.
You know, I have to say, too, I think if we, you know, in an event like that, I think if we had five people taking the calls, they'd still be overwhelmed. Depending on the severity of an issue. But we'll take a look and we'll see. You know, we have our upcoming strategic planning session with the council on March 4th. And, you know, we'll bring that up. You know, public safety's top of our list always as council members. So we'll talk about that and we'll kind of see what we need to do.
Okay. All right. And during Tuesday's meeting, Alex Ranaghi referenced the Emerald Fire and commented on the need to reevaluate possible strategies to fund underground power lines to reduce the risk of fires. And you had mentioned that you're working with Dave Min and Cotty Petrie Norris for underground money. What does that process look like? Can you walk us through exactly what you'd like them to advocate for us?
Yeah, so we met with Dave Min about a month ago. Mayor Pro Tem Whalen and I and Sheree Dupree met with him, and we went through, we have a list of kind of asks, but at the top of the list are always public safety items. And one of them was, you know, undergrounding on Laguna Canyon Road. There's kind of like two parts of that.
Right.
One is that we can, the OC Parks is allowing us to underground in the park area, just in the very, you know, beginning of the park area there. But in order to do that, we have to do environmental impact and other studies. And so we asked Dave Min for money for that. And then additionally after that, then we need to get the, you know, 50 or 60 million for undergrounding those lines. So it's kind of a two-part process. So we laid that out for him, along with some other requests that we had, building fire station in South Laguna and other things like that. But we're also going to talk to Cotty about that, I think next week. We have a meeting with Cotty and her staff. So we want to get in the budget cycle sooner than later this time around and make sure, because there's a lot of money sloshing around in Sacramento for safety, particularly for fire, because it's, you know, such a widespread problem in our state. So we want to get our hands on that money. But in order to do that, you have to prove that you have a project that's kind of ready to go. And right. We've done all of our kind of upfront work on undergrounding on Laguna Canyon Road in terms of the, you know, assessment stuff. But now we need to get into the next phase, which is getting money for the impact studies.
Right. And is there like a deadline for getting that money? Is there a time where, okay, well, we waited too long?
No, I don't think we've waited too long. We got in front of it. You know, we won't have Cotty next time around, and we won't have Dave Mann. You know, the deck chairs have been rearranged. So we're just trying to get our ask in now. And I think that was the right thing to do. So, yeah, we gave him a presentation. We had a very good discussion with him, as we will with Cotty.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. And since January of 2020, I've been beating the virus and the mandates and the vaccines into the ground and getting people to try and mask and doing all the right stuff, get your vaccines, get your boosters. So this is huge for me. When discussing hybrid meetings, George had mentioned that the virus is still dangerous, but, and I thought to myself, but what? You know, being tired of being masked is worth the risk of even losing one life. It struck me as odd. So he mentioned that people who enter the chamber have to be vaccinated. Who exactly is going to verify vaccination status? How would that work?
Yeah, I have the same question, Ed. And, you know, I think we'll put a sign on the door. We may have to have somebody asking that question as people come in. I'm going to ask Sheree about how we, you know, verify that. You know,
you have to
rely on some honesty, because I don't know if we're going to have people, you know, take out their vaccination cards or not.
Well, that's the question. Yeah. Would you require vaccination cards or the little code that you can read off the phone, the QR code?
Well, I mean, I don't know if we'll go that far, Ed. We haven't really talked about that, but You know, I'm super reluctant to. If we want to have people in the chamber, I don't want to have a lot of chairs in there. We still have a pandemic.
Right.
It hasn't gone away. I still wear my mask. I don't care, you know, the fact the mask order's been lifted. When I go to the store, I go inside, I wear a mask. I don't know. We'll have to, you know, you have to rely on people's honesty unless you want them to pull their, you know, card out and show you.
Yeah, I'm a little more jaded. Yeah. I'm show me your card. Yeah. I'm that guy.
Yeah, I get that too. I absolutely get that. I know.
We also covered the ballot initiative on Tuesday, and I found this kind of striking, that we had Joy Brenner, who's a city council member in Newport Beach, and Mary Sidoni from Costa Mesa. They spoke in favor of our ballot initiative, citing those two cities and how it's worked for them. But Laguna is so unique. It's so much different than either of those two cities. Explain to us how our situation is unique from theirs.
Well, you know, Newport Beach passed their what they call a slow growth initiative back in 2002. You know, they're a lot bigger city. And, you know, they had a lot of issues with, you know, the Irvine company nearby doing a lot of big developments. We, of course, don't have that. Costa Mesa's ballot measure, which ours is ostensibly modeled after to some degree, is actually quite different in that their ballot measure applies to rezoning. So let's say you want to take something that was, you know, residential, once residential, you want to make it commercial. That's rezoning. Ours just applies to permitting. So it's basically, you know, permitting by ballot measure. So ours is vastly different. You know, I got a lot of calls about this about people who watched the council meeting and were offended by these people from other cities calling in. but yeah, so ours is different. So, you know, top line for me, and I think we talked about this at the council meeting. Top line for me is, you know, having served on the Planning Commission for 5 years, you know, our rules are already very, very stringent, and it's very difficult to build here. So you put another layer on top of everything else. Okay. It's kind of unnecessary. You know, we have a great Planning Commission, as I think I outlined, and when big projects have come before our Planning Commission, they've handled it exactly the way they should have handled it. And, you know, Ed, I think about this as, you know, what will we have 10 or 20 years from now when some of us will be gone and we don't know what the needs of the community might be, you know, 10 or 20 years from now. And I don't, I'm not one to second guess what might be needed. Let's look at what happened in the last couple of years with COVID.
Right.
No one expected that. And as a consequence, you know, we did outdoor dining, for example. Well, now, just think about this with the ballot measure. You know, I think Zinc is one of the most popular local hangouts in town. And, you know, they went into the adjacent parking lot. Well, now with the ballot measure, he'd either not be allowed to have that anymore, which is very popular, or he'd have to pay according to the ballot measure and the number of seats he's added outside in that area. He'd probably have to pay millions of dollars in lieu parking.
Right.
And that not going to work.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of that. There's a lot of unintended consequences that go along with that. I also, you know, Bob mentioned this and he went into it in detail is, you know, another unintended consequence is little guys get caught up in this. So let's say you have a couple projects that are decent in size. Let's say they're existing projects, but you know, maybe they've changed use or whatever you may be. But as you start adding up all the projects within a half a mile of north or south on Coast Highway, as you start adding up the square footage and the number of cars associated with a business, after you get to like 88,000 square feet, that could just be a bunch of businesses kind of in that area. Any square foot or any trip or any business that goes over that limit would have to go to the ballot. So let's say I want to have a hat store. And there's been a lot of, you know, business within a half mile north and south. And I'm not talking about new development. I'm just talking about, you know,
existing
projects in general.
Right.
Yeah. So then what's a cat store guy going to do? Go to the ballot? I mean, so there's a lot of that kind of stuff. It's just not necessary. And, you know, the other thing people keep saying, which is a catch line. Oh, we're going to have a food court. Well,
right.
We're not a food court because we council can by resolution dial back in a restaurant anytime we want to. And then you also have to remember that it's very expensive to have it convert a small space in Laguna to a restaurant. So, you know, you're not going to plunk $500,000 in to put a kitchen in a little tiny place where they might be able to have 10 or 15 tables and think that's a good business proposition. People just aren't going to do that. You have to think of it pragmatically. I mean, there's a lot of things. We could talk about this for a long time, but, you know, bottom line is we need to deal with the city with parking. They keep saying, well, we don't want to get rid of the grandfather parking. Well, one of the reasons we have a problem is because of the grandfather parking. You know, you can't allow grandfather parking and not provide any spaces. So anyway.
Thoughtfully explained. I want to tell you that was as thorough and thoughtfully explained as we've had here on the program, and thank you for that. I understand that those two people that called in, one from Newport, one from Costa Mesa, they also called into the Cleveland City Council meeting as well in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure why. they're making their rounds, you know.
Lucky Cleveland.
I also want to talk about the slight change in a 12-day advance noticing of city council meeting agendas. So the council, what they did was they directed staff to provide a more robust description on the tentative agenda and post that tentative agenda in a more visible location on the website and also post agendas on the Wednesday before the council meeting when City Hall is closed on that Friday. City Hall is closed every other Friday and staff would provide an agenda report for council vote formalization for the council's direction. So let me go over real quick before I ask you the question. So when they prepare the recap and agenda, I imagine it's just a member of the staff that has to write it up. It goes up the chain from that point, and that very first staff person at that point has to get it closer to the final version earlier than usual. And then Sheree has to read them thoroughly earlier than usual. Phil Cohn has to weigh in. And then as she does, Sheree reviews every single agenda report. And then my understanding is that now the city department heads used to gather and discuss this on a Thursday. And they would all sit around and review it together on a Thursday. But now, because it's Wednesday, they'd have to depend on each of them to individually review it by email. So I have a couple of questions. Isn't that an awful lot of, isn't that a lot more on Sheree's plate? And doesn't the moving it from Thursday to Wednesday increase the possibility of errors?
Well, and for one thing, Sheree's going to come back to us with what this is going to cost us to do this. And, you know, that might be a tipping point in terms of, if we have to add staff to get this out early, I'm not sure that's
right.
That's a good. You know, you don't want to lard on cost if you don't have to. That's number one. Number two is that. So what I said was, first of all, I think how we do things are fine. They've been fine for years and years and years, right. And all of a sudden it's the problem. I don't really personally think it is, but what I said was, why don't we just add a description of the issue, which we already have in our tentative agenda. It's on the recap, but people don't tend to read the recap. So that's why I said to Sheree, let's just put it on a prominent place on the city website so people can look at it. But the other thing is, and just put in, and then a description of what it is. You don't have to put what the staff recommendation is, because as you just mentioned, you know, there it's not as simple as just writing it up and putting it out there. It's a lot of work that's been going on behind the scenes to make sure that what we're putting out is accurate, has to be reviewed. You know, we're very careful about those staff reports, and I don't want an incomplete staff report. I certainly don't want a draft staff report. That actually makes zero sense, right. Because things change in the interim. It's sometimes a little bit fluid, and it's a lack of understanding, in my view, of really what it takes to get these agenda bills out. And what goes on behind the scenes, if you don't understand how that works, then you might think that's just perfectly okay. I don't really agree with that.
Right. It's like
it's not because of transparency. Just to be clear, it's just because I want to see an accurate staff report. I don't want to have to add more money and resources for this, because I think it's been working just absolutely fine. You know, these things are posted on Thursdays, and you know, you have plenty of time to read them and digest them and think about your questions. So I actually don't see it as an issue, but we'll see what Sheree comes back. But if it's costly, I'm not going to be a fan of doing anything that is going to make it, you know, either more time consuming or more expensive.
Okay. All right. Well, just a couple more things and I'll let you go. That you've got the State of the City address coming up on the 1st. You pretty much got it dialed in. You ready for it?
Well, it's floating around in my head as I normally do when I was working, when I had these big presentations before boards and stuff like that. You know, I'd always kind of think about some themes and I'd kind of let it roll around in my head. But on Monday, I'm going to start putting the pen to paper, so to speak, and getting it ready to go.
All right. And we'll look forward to it. I'll keep the listeners involved. There are tickets still available, I believe, so I'll keep the listeners still involved as to that. And finally, before I let you go, you reported that the Parking Master Plan Subcommittee is going to be releasing the draft work plan soon. They're holding a listening session on March 8th. Is that correct?
That's right. But we're going to try to get input from the residents. Hopefully we get people, you know, good turnout for that. You know, we're going to talk about our work plan. And it's not going to be a council meeting. It's just going to, I think Bob and I will attend and we'll just listen to what people have to say. We're not going to be passing judgment or making comments. We're just going to, you know, take input. We'll just use that as just another source of information as we kind of, you know, fill out the dance card on our master plan. It's long overdue. I think I said that in the council meeting. We've had parking issues for years and we've done a darn thing about it. So we need to work on it.
All right. Again, that's Tuesday, March 8th at 6 o'clock at the Susie Q Center. Mayor Kemp, thank you so much as always for this conversation.
No, love it, Ed. Anytime.
It was great talking to you. We will talk to you again soon.
Have a good weekend.
You as well. Thank you. 8:50 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show.